Mr. Ware, reel 5. So what was your next move after the course, the survival course?
We were all posted to operational units, and I was posted to 161658 heavy conversion unit at Rickall, outside Selby in Yorkshire, where we were actually only there for about 4 weeks, learning to fly 4-engine aeroplanes. Mostly it was taxiing, takeoff, landing, and a couple of cross countries.
This was conversion onto to Lancasters, 4-engine Lancasters.
No, well, this is an actual conversion onto Halifaxes.
Ah, right. And what were the Halifax like to fly?
Well, this was a Halifax too. She was tough and she was good and she was easy, and the performance on one, the three engines wasn't good. But it was all right, but I only flew them for 3 weeks. Because we then finished our training, and we had a fairly high grading as a crew.
Now, had you formed your crews? You haven't
talked
about that.
We should have done that, because we were formed at Moreton and the Marsh.
Tell us about how the process of forming a crew, then.
First of all, you met my navigator, and I met in the mess. We were arrived about the same time and got pally, and we just joined forces.
So it was you who chose your navigator?
Yeah.
Now, what was his name?
Derek Dawe, D-A-W-E. Still going.
And he was a pilot officer as well?
Yep.
And what was it that you liked about David Dawe?
Derek.
Derek, sorry, my writing's terrible as well, sir.
Well, I'm not quite sure how to answer that. I just seemed to get on with him. We actually met before we knew what we had to do anyhow. And then when we were briefed that we had to join up forces, and we were, if you couldn't do it, well, otherwise they'd do it for you. So he and I just got on.
And who were the other members of your crew?
Well, that was an engineer. Moreton the Marsh was two gunners and...
Do you remember their names?
Yes, of course, yes.
We've just got a photograph here, which perhaps we'll get permission to copy. There's Alex Armstrong. What was he?
A bomb aimer.
He'd be a leading aircraft, wouldn't he? Or
sergeant.
Sergeant. And what was
anybody who went on operations was a sergeant, was the minimum rank.
What was Armstrong like?
Okay.
And Don Brown, what was he?
He was an experienced radio officer. He was a warrant officer, as you see. And he had been an instructor at Moreton in the Marsh and wanted to go back on operational flying. And he talked to me and the navigator and said he'd like to join us. Mainly through the next three men, the gunners. These three, they got on. Brown met them in the sergeant's mess and liked them. They all got on well together. And they said, we'd like to crew up with you, David.
Now, these are gunners. Now, I can't quite read the writing here. Walthu?
Walthu, W-A-L-T-H-E-W.
Do you know his first name?
Tim.
And G.H. Knight, what was that? What was his first name? Doesn't matter too much.
George Knight.
And
Dodds.
Dodds. William Dodds? Dodds?
Bill Dodds.
And what were these gunners like as a group or individually?
Amazing. First class. Not one of them had to be there. The three gunners and two gunners and the engineer were in reserved occupations. And the only way you could get out of a reserved occupation in the Second World War was to volunteer for aircrew. And they volunteer aircrew. Bill Dodds was a London a speed cop in Croydon. Knight had his own building business, plus a family. and will not, will do, was a reserved occupation in insurance world. So there were three interesting characters. They were very mature, very all very capable. Brown got to like them, the Warsaw in the mess, bet up with them in the mess, and then they met up with Armstrong.
And did you all bond together? I mean, was it a very close relationship?
Oh, yeah. Yes, I mean, you know, we got to know each other pretty well. Yeah. Yes, and we respected each other.
Did we, as equals, or did rank matter? You know, because two of you were officers, the others weren't.
Well, I think that's a difficult one to answer, really. And, it didn't, really. I mean, it did in the sense of messes and things like that, but in flying and the aeroplane, working together, and it didn't.
Would you refer to them by their rank or their surname, or would you call them by their first name?
No, by their first name. But they wouldn't call me David, though. They'd probably call me Sir.
So it was relaxed one way.
I mean, they turned me into being a great socialist, this bunch of guys.
Now, tell me about that.
Well, I mean, they were... coming into the sergeant's mess was an eye... From the sergeant's mess, the officer's mess was an eye-opener. And I just thought it was a lot of nonsense. It shouldn't be there. The ranking of officers shouldn't be there. And funny enough, all those three men got commissioned by the end of the tour. Which we will start in a moment.
Did you do anything about your new social? I mean, was it Labour Party or Communist Party, or was it just a sort of personal belief?
Oh, no. I mean, just Labour. And I joined the Labour Party in 1945 and voted my voting. But you ask a difficult question. I mean, our crew were funny. It wasn't like the Army or Navy where they lived in different messes and call each other by surnames. And, air crew flying together, I think, bonded you more than anything else. Because you had to bond in the way if you got shot down, you had to know how to get out of the aeroplane. And we used to practice that a lot. We used to have a lot of laughs over it. And big fat ass get out of the way, and I can't get out. We had a lot of fun in that sense. They were good. But the interesting thing, they were all commissioned at the end of the tour.
Anything else you were doing that you can remember at Rickall?
Not really. Very quick, very straightforward. And when we finished, my flight commander called me and he said, look, we have a group captain here from Pathfinders who is interviewing, and your crew has been put up as one of the people to be interviewed. So I went in and met this rather dynamic group captain with lots of brain and lots of medals.
You know who it was?
Yes, McNamara. Not McNamara. McNamara. Wasn't McNamara. Hamish Mahady. Hamish Mahady. Group captain Hamish Mahady. Very famous pathfinder. And he interviewed me and said that basically what they were doing, Bennett, who ran Pathfinders, was fed up with having his crews replaced by hairy old men who'd been on operations before and did it their way. He wanted to train the crews to do it his way, in terms of navigation and skills and total crew skills. So we were one of the first crews to go into Pathfinders who had never been on operations. So I met him. He told me all about it. And then he said, "Now I want you to go and talk to your crew and see me this afternoon. And if you want, you come to Pathfinders. If you don't want, then you don't have to." So we met and lunch, and I told them. They sort of seemed quite excited. We all met the group captain again, together as a crew. They said, "You've got a high grading as a crew. And we want you to come to Pathfinders."
And that was with number 635 Squadron, yeah. RF, and part of number 8 group, yep. Pathfinders.
Yep. We had to go to War Boys, but only for a week to convert them. We'd been checked out on Halifaxes, and we had to be checked out on Lancasters. We went to a small unit in War Boys, which rubber the Pathfinders.
And how did you tell me what you tell me about the Lancaster? That's what you were flying. Well, what were they like to fly? Give us a description.
Fabulous, fabulous. A lot of power and very tough from operational point of view, getting shot at. And she used to fly on. You could even fly it on two engines. Aerodynamically, she was terrific. Comfort-wise, not all that wonderful, but, you know, it was a bomber. But she was great airman, one of the best in the Second World War, I would say.
And where would each member of the crew go? How are they distributed in the plane? If you could just describe their sort of accommodation.
Well, pilot me upstairs in the front, in the cockpit there. Engineer, Bill Dodd, standing next door to me here. Down in the nose was Armstrong, the bomb aimer. Navigator was behind me with the radio operator next door to him. Mid-upper gunner was a bit further back, and the rear gunner right at the arse end of the aeroplane.
And what controls did you have in front of you to control that little Lancaster?
As a pilot, I flew the aeroplane. I mean, it was the joystick was there on the left-hand side, and I'd sit up in the window there looking out.
You had no problem with the conversion course?
Nope.
And then, tell me, when you went to Downham Market, could you describe the layout of the station at Downham Market? That was your first operational station, wasn't it?
Yep. Downham Market was a wartime station and been built, as all were built in the same pattern. Officers' mess, sergeants' mess, airmen's mess. Built well away from the airfield. And so all officers' messes had, this shows you a bit of tradition, all officers' messes had squash courts built. And it was right in the backwoods of Norfolk when they had built the airfield, they built a squash court. And therefore, the airfield was very well spread out. So when you were on operations, you were moved by transport. Otherwise, you went by bike. Everybody had a bike. And the mess where we actually ate and drank was at least a mile and a half from where we slept. So the whole thing was very dispersed.
And what was your actual accommodation like? You had a room to yourself, didn't you? What was
no
it like?
Way.
Oh, you didn't have a room?
Not on operations, no.
What was your room like?
We had a Nissen hut. You know what a Nissen hut is?
Just describe it for them,
a
how
Nissen
it was divided.
A Nissen hut is just a big room with a fire in the middle and enough for six beds. And the ablutions and the washing facilities was another building, which about 30 or 40 yards ago. So when you wanted to go to the toilet or you wanted to wash and shower, you had to move across outside. It was very primitive, but the fire was very good. They always had it stoked up and it was kept well warmed. It was fine, very basic. But we weren't too
good. Did you have a division between your, you know, the beds, or were the beds just open? Was it an open room?
There was no, they were just like putting three beds down there and three beds down here with gaps in between, you know. And a chest of drawers, I think, we had where we could put our clothes. It was very basic. And bloody cold, too. Especially in the morning, because the fire would have died on you.
And you went to Downham Market in, September 44.
Yep.
Now, when you arrived at Downham Market, were you given any specialist training as a pathfinder, or what a pathfinder's role would be?
Yeah, absolutely.
Tell me about that.
The first thing was to decide what sort of crew we were going to be. Pathfinders had two crews, blind crew or visual crew. The visual crew dropped with the bomb aimer ahead, visually dropping. The blind crew dropped on H2S with no bomb aimer, all done by inside the aeroplane. But just to get set in, because we were a crew and had a bomb aimer, we were going a visual crew, and we did basic runnings, bomb aiming trips on the marshes near King's Lynn. So mainly bombing runs we'd practice, and doing a cross country to bring us to the bombing area on the very old timing. Timing was the essence of Pathfinders. It was absolutely essential you were there on time. And if you weren't there on time, then you didn't drop. Because you wouldn't drop a player if you weren't on target, because you were... and we had fighter affiliation. That was corkscrewing and diving and pulling the aeroplane up. This was for night fighters. Night fighters used to tend to get underneath your belly and pull the aeroplane. The fighter would come up underneath you and pepper you without you knowing it was there. So the idea of corkscrewing was keeping away from night fighters, or avoiding night fighters, or confusing night fighters. So when we come to our first trip, was Cap Canaveral, and everything went well. Then we went to this Operation Sturckreiter.
Now, before you could you fill us in with exactly what the routine was for a trip from start to finish?
Well, first of all, the first thing was the notification to all the crews whether we were going to fly that night or not. And it went up on the board. A notice went up board every day of no flying tonight, or so many people will fly, and you were named. So therefore, then you geared yourself and had a rest or whatever time it was going to be. Then you had to go to the briefing. Before briefing, we always went to the mess to have a pre-flight meal, which consisted always of bacon and eggs. And since bacon and eggs were absolutely non-grata with the rest of the ground crew, we used to sit there in our glory. But then we'd go down to the briefing room. And when we entered the briefing room, it was the first time we knew where we were going.
How was that?
Because they had it on the map, and the target on the map.
What, a big map in front of
us? Yes, a big map in front of us.
Now, how was the briefing room laid out?
The briefing room was a stage at one end where the group captain, the senior officers, squadron commanders briefed us, and in front of them were... It's like a theatre, I suppose. There were just tables, and each crew had a table. And the navigators had their maps and charts and things on those tables.
And what form did the briefing take? Who would speak first?
First to the group captain, the station commander spoke first. Told us where we were going. And then it would be followed by a series of briefings, like the Met report. And the bomb load, or the method of marking for that night, was probably given by the wing commander, supported by the head of operations. Then the intelligence giving us reports on where we were going and what the target was. We always had a target. I never went on any trip without a target. Intelligent people would tell us the target, tell us the object of the trip, and that was it. Then, when the crews would spend some time together talking about the trip with the navigators, then we would go to the area where our parachutes and flying equipment was kept in a Nissen hut. You had your own locker, and in it you had your flying equipment, parachute plus.
Now, what was your flying kit? What exactly would you be wearing and
boots,
carrying?
Flying boots. A flying suit.
What was that?
It was one complete suit, which and plus a leather jacket on top of it. How do I describe it? A flying suit was... well, I find that difficult to describe, right?
Okay.
It was one suit. It was one which had a fur neck lining and had sleeves down, and the idea was to keep you warm. plus your boots, plus your helmet, plus the parachute. Then you get all dressed up and dolled up. And then outside that would arrive the transport buses, normally lorries or big 3-ton trucks. And then each crew had allocated just certain trucks, and then you'd get and out you go to the airplane. And then when you got to the aircraft, you would get in the airplane. Each crew member would go to his own place. We'd start the engines and run the engines and check all the revs. Gunners would check their equipment and navigators would check their equipment. Then, full stop, we would close everything down and get out and wait for our time of departure. We always were given an exact time to taxi, exact time to be on the end of the runway, exact time for takeoff. And then we would go outside, have our cigarettes and have pee in the bushes, and then at the given time we would get back in the airplane and start up and taxi out to the end of the runway. And there off you went. And that was absolute sexual routine.
Now, take us through your first raid. What do you remember of the first raid?
The first raid was Cap Canaveral, but it wasn't rare. Cap Canaveral was the target. It was the V2 rockets were being fired from there. And it was still not being taken over by the Allied ground forces.
Now, what was the date of this raid?
It was June, July, September. September the 26th.
And what do you remember of this particular raid?
Well, it was our first raid, and it was Cap Canaveral is right on the coast. So we just crossed over from Dover and did a run on Cap Canaveral and dropped our bombs and then came home. So it wasn't very dodgy.
Now, was this a Pathfinder raid? I mean,
yes, every trip I did was with the Pathfinder.
Now, what particular bombs would you have as Pathfinders? How
well,
would
mainly none. I mean, there would be
that's what I mean,
flares, marking equipment. But at that stage, because we were under training still, we didn't carry flares, we carried bombs.
And what do you remember?
2,000 pounders. Well, not. I mean, it wasn't a very frightening one because we knew we were very near home. But I had this trouble with. I didn't drop the bombs. The bombs didn't go.
Now, tell us this story. I know you don't want to give the man's name, but you had a problem with your bomb aiming, didn't you?
Well, this Cap Canaveral was the first time we came back, and we came back with our bombs. The second time was an operation over Sturckrader. Sturckrader was in the Ruhr.
How do you spell that?
Sturckrader, Sturckrader.
And what was the date of that raid?
The date of that raid was September the 30th.
So 4 days later?
Yeah. And this was the first real big raid we've been on. And I mean, you know, we could see all the flak coming up and we could see all the aircraft all over the place. We could see fighters, whether it be our fighters or German fighters. You could see the whole... It was daylight raid, so you could see the whole panorama of what was going on. So we ran in early because we were escorting the master bomber. He would be dropping flares, we dropped our bombs, and our bombs didn't go. We didn't... And the bomb aimer said, the bombs haven't gone. So I took a quick decision and did a 180, which is a bit of a stupid thing to do, really. But I did 180 and came back into the bomber stream further back to do another run. And again, over the target, bombs didn't go. So we set course for home, and we had to cross the Rhine. And down below, I could see some ships. And I steered toward these ships and did a bombing run on it. And this, just as we were steadying up on course, the rear gunner said, "Skipper, we're going to be hit." And I looked out, I could see the metal coming out of the wing, and the aircraft was swinging madly, and there was a lot of banging going on. And the next moment we saw the flak. It was predicted flak. Predicted flak was when they could actually isolate one aircraft and fire at it, as opposed to en masse, they used to use window, and window used to saturate the screen, so predicted flak wasn't really possible. But this time we got into predicted flak, and we dived out of it just in time. But as we dived, I just leant across and pulled master toggle and let the bombs go.
And what happened when you got home? What was wrong with this, the bomb either?
We never knew, I never knew. I think it was just freezing.
He lost his nerve?
Yeah. I think he was just freezing. So anyhow, we got back, and having already had this Cap Grenet incident, we got back, and I just had a quiet word with the CO, and he said, "Right, we'll look after it. You're going on leave tonight anyhow." And we were going, and we were quite battered around. The radio operator got out of his seat because he wanted to know what was going on. And the piece of flak went right through his bloody seat and out through the roof. So he had a very narrow escape. We were very shaken up by this incident. So off we went for a night, and we all gathered down the Regent's Palace and had a good old blowout that night. Next question.
What's the next raid you remember, really?
Well, then we got settled in Duisburg Day and
June. When did you start actually dropping the flares, acting as passports?
First, we did not start dropping flares until trip 15.
Okay, all right, so that's fair.
15
so before
trips,
that?
Well, the first 15 trips, we went off escorting the master bomber.
Now, tell me, why were you escorting the master? What was your role escorting?
Well, we had bombs, and our role was to be trained, and it was a training role, really, on operations. Bennett said, "You've got to get your experience, and you're going to get your experience with the master bomber."